On this episode of This Week in Linux, TeamViewer 13 was announced, and they're bringing native Linux support to their remote desktop software. We saw many distro releases this week, and in fact, we'll be taking a look at six of them. We talk about how to get Microsoft Office 2016 on Linux. And later in the show, we'll jump into some Linux gaming, one of which is a little bit skin crawly. All that and much more coming up. I'm Michael Tennell with Tux Digital, and this is your weekly source for Linux GNUs. CodeWeavers announced this week that Crossover 17.0 was released, and with this, they're bringing support for Microsoft Office 2016 to Linux. So you can utilize Crossover 17 to use Microsoft Office 2016. Now, it kind of seems weird that it's 2016 or whatever, because while we're in 2017, but Microsoft Office 2016 is the latest version. They release a new version roughly every 3 years or so. So the next one is probably going to be in 2019. If you've never heard of Crossover before, it is a commercial version, not the commercial version, a commercial version of Wine made by CodeWeavers. And CodeWeavers does a lot of development for Wine, and they host the Wine website and a lot of other things. So by purchasing Crossover, you are contributing monetarily to Wine in a way. Not exactly, but in a way. You also get like easy installs for Windows apps with Crossover, and portable virtual Windows environment, or they, as they call it, bottles, wine bottles. Anyway, and also another cool thing that you get with Crossover is a shared clipboard between Wine apps and your Linux desktop. So if you are interested in using Crossover to maybe convince some people to switch over to Linux, then so they can have Microsoft Office 2016, this is a good opportunity for that. So even less reasons to use Windows. TeamViewer 13 was announced this week, and it is now native for Linux. Well, I mean, it always is run. It's been running on Linux for a very long time, but it no longer needs Wine to accomplish all of the features that it previously did. Now, it also has native 64-bit without requiring 32-bit dependencies like it used to for compensation of the Windows like Wine packages and stuff. So the transition actually allows that to be done as well. And they're also going to be available for Debian and RPM packages. So TeamViewer is probably the go-to remote support software on Linux because it's easy to use for both the remote supporter and the supportee. It's a lot user-friendly for pretty much everybody. It is proprietary, so that's unfortunate, but overall, it has saved me a lot of headaches in the past, so I'm really happy to see that it is now completely native. And they're using, in order to do that, they've transitioned their interface to a Qt-based user interface. So that is pretty cool, because I'm a big fan of Qt. Now, they did also announce that they're going to have initial Wayland support, but it's very limited in what it can do, and that's because Wayland is a protocol that doesn't really support the process of remote support. That was weird. Anyway, the Wayland support has to be done on the compositor side, not the Wayland side. So that creates some complications because there are so many different competing compositors because the desktop environments have to build their own compositing thing. Because Wayland's not really a display server replacement, it's more of a protocol, so it's just a little bit more complicated, so it'll be a little while before TeamViewer will support the Wayland side of distros. But they are talking about that it is part of the roadmap that they are working on. MusicCube 0.31.0 was released this week. MusicCube is a cross-platform, terminal-based audio engine, library, player, and server written in C++. The cross-platform part is Linux, Windows, macOS, and Android. Now, this is really cool because if you've ever heard of CMUS, this is kind of like that. So you can have, you know, listen to music inside of your terminal. But this also works as a server, so it kind of has a combination of multiple types of software. So like there's a lot of music daemons, and there's some clients for those, but not typically they don't have one like built into the, like their own, the whole all-in-one thing. But they, but the Android app is probably the most interesting to me because it has, the Android apps has support for the remote control, so you can control your terminal player through the Android app, but you can also stream the audio from your terminal player to the Android app. So that is pretty interesting. To point out, though, the Music Cube Android app is not available in the Play Store. You have to sideload the APK instead, which you can download from the GitHub repo that is linked in the show notes. ArcBash 2.5.1 was released this week. ArcBash is a code generator for parsing bash arguments. Bash doesn't come with command line argument parsing. Well, I mean, you have to build it in yourself in a variety of different ways. You could do it with like if statements or case system or like however you want to do it. There's multiple ways, but it's a cumbersome way to, thing to do. So most bash scripts do not have any kind of argument handling at all. And on this website, they say that based on their research, that 84.6% of bash scripts they could find didn't have command line arguments. And that's probably because, one, people don't necessarily need to have them, but also it is kind of cumbersome. So this is a script, or I guess it's a script, but it's also a tool for scripts, where they say that it you write a short definition and let ArcBash modify your script so that it magically starts to expose a command line interface to your users and arguments passed using this interface as variables. Essentially what it does is that you put in your script, you give it some like references of like, they have their own syntax, you use the syntax to create arguments that you want to use, and then it will generate that script for you and you just apply it to your own script. It's actually a really cool idea, and I've given a little bit of a try, not that much, so I can't really say whether it's good or not. So based on my limited testing, it does look pretty interesting with a lot of potential. Next up in the show is Bodhi Linux 4.4. Bodhi Linux 4.4 was released this week, and with it comes with a lot of software updates and security patches from the repositories of Ubuntu 16.04 LTS. They also upgraded the kernel to 4.13 and the Enlightenment EFL library to 1.19.1. This is mostly just a maintenance update, but it is nice to see continued support for any distro, and especially if you're interested in checking out Enlightenment. Well, more like, not necessarily Enlightenment, Enlightenment 17, which is now Moksha. I think it's Moksha. Fork. That's what Bodhi Linux uses. So if you want to try out like an Enlightenment flavor variant on Ubuntu, then check out Bodhi Linux. Peppermint 8 Respin was released this week, and with it comes a lot of interesting changes, such as upgrade to Nemo 3.4.7, which is a much needed thing because the Nemo dependency of the Cinnamon desktop has been removed. So that's much better. So that's good for them to update to that. The Papyrus fork theme of Pephyrus, which I really like the name of that, was updated to support newer features and versions of XFWM4, GTK, and their icon set. Advert Blocker was reinstalled in Peppermint 8 Respin. LightDM GTK Greeter was replaced with Slick Greeter. They disabled the GTK overlay scroll bars, which is nice because it actually gets in the way sometimes, depending on the application. So I can see why people might not like that. They've added Mint translations from the Linux Mint team so that certain aspects of it will automatically translate through those. And they've updated the kernel to 4.10, as well as all the 16.04 maintenance and security bug fixes and stuff like that. So Peppermint 8 Respin, check it out if you're interested. As a request to the people who make Peppermint, consider not using the word respin? Because when I first saw the news for this, I was very confused about what this meant, because I was wondering, like, it's a respin of what? But what they mean is a respin or a rebuild or refresh of the particular version of Peppermint 8. So if you look at like most distros, when they say respin, they're referring to like a modification of some kind, whereas this one is just an updated version. So you know, don't have to or anything. I'm just saying, like, maybe consider, like, a rebuild or a refresh or something like that. Or just, like, Peppermint 8.1. That's good, too. This week, Puppy Linux 7.5 was released and now supports BIOS and UEFI. The Puppy Linux 7.5 32-bit version has kernel 4.4.95 so that it works better with older hardware, and which makes sense because there's no reason to have 32-bit on new hardware. The 64-bit version has kernel 4.9.58, so if you have newer hardware, you would use this version instead. If you've never heard of Puppy Linux, in their own words, is small, runs in RAM, and is lightning fast. Very versatile and good fun. It has everything a novice will need while allowing full control to the experienced user. I disagree with that. The whole everything the novice will need part, no. It's a little bit over the top. It's a little over the head of most novice people. Most novice users aren't going to be comfortable with using something that is so unique. But Puppy Linux is fantastic, and the RAM usage is very cool. The Joe Windows Manager is an interesting choice, but they've been using that for a very long time. But overall, Puppy Linux is a really cool thing, and Xenial Pup is the release for 7.5, which provides packages to the 1604 repo of Ubuntu. Puppy Linux 7.5 release ISO was 330 megs, so very small. And I'd say if you're new to Puppy and you're interested into it and looking into it, something that's good to know is that you don't need to use like a hard drive. You don't need to install it. You can just run it in RAM and then save your progress or your persistent data to another drive, if you want to, or even a CD, if you want to as well. But what's really cool is that Puppy Linux has a layered file system so that you can manipulate things without modifying like underneath it. So you just create layers on top. So that's a really interesting way of managing a file system. But anyway, I would say that Puppy Linux is a great distro, but not really that good for beginners. But still, if you're interested in checking it out, you'll find links to in the show notes in the video description. Linux AIO is Linux all-in-one. They released this week that the Ubuntu 17 Flavors all-in-one ISO has been released. It has support for Ubuntu, Kubuntu, Ubuntu Budgie, Ubuntu Mate, Zubuntu, and Lubuntu 17.10 releases. It has support for both 32-bit and 64-bit versions, so you can download the ISO that has a pack for both. There's actually one that has 32-bit and 64 built in the same ISO, or you can just get 32-bit of all the versions and all the flavors, or 64-bit version ISO for all the flavors. Linux AIO uses SourceForge for their downloads, and they archive all the ISOs into 7-zip files, or 7z files, which you'll need P7-zip or some other kind of 7-zip extraction tool. Most distros have this built in default for their extracting archiving system, so like Nemo in Mint or Dolphin in Plasma, or you know, things like that for Nautilus in GNOME based distros. You could just usually right click those files and then extract from there. Some of them require you to open the files and then extract from the built-in manager rather than the actual file manager itself, but the archiver, I mean. If you're interested in that, check it out. It's actually really cool. I've tested it for quite a few years and many different iterations, and it works really nicely if you're wanting to try out all the various different flavors. Debian 9.3 was released this week. Debian 9.3 is a maintenance and bug fix release, including mostly just security fixes and bug fixes and things like that. But also this week, Debian announced that Debian 10 is going to have unattended upgrades ability so that you can do automatic installation of security upgrades. And they're also going to add support for extended 64-bit feature to the SysLinux bootloader. Debian also announced sources.debian.org, or DebSources, a platform for viewing the Debian source code via the web in a searchable form for all Debian releases. This is really cool because it used to be pretty complicated to find the source files for pretty much everything. I mean, it's possible to do it. It was just time-consuming and a little tedious. But now they're doing it in a much a much easier to use and straightforward way. So, very cool. Orok GNU/Linux 2.0 was released this week. This is a free software-only distro. It's a fork of Triskel GNU/Linux, and it uses Linux Libre 4.9.66 LTS Linux kernel. Well, the Libre fork of the Linux kernel. It uses Mate 1.12.1, which is kind of old, but still usable. Replaces MDM with LightDM, so that's interesting. It uses, it has by default apt because it's based on Ubuntu. Well, it's based on Triskel, which is based on Ubuntu, which is based on Debian, so it's got apt. Anyway, it also has support for uRPMI and uSRC for installing packages with RPM and source tarballs. There's a really interesting thing that they do as well that not only is the free software thing, that's cool too, but like something that's pretty cool that called the Package Manager Simulator. It's a tool that they use so that you can use the syntaxes and other package manager stuff you're used to inside of their distro for installing applications. So you can install, uninstall, update, remove packages, and etc. from using the syntax and the commands from any package manager. Like they say any package manager you want to. I don't know how far that goes, but like if you want to do pacman tech capital S in the package name, it should work. So that's a pretty cool thing, even though it doesn't use pacman. It just interprets it back to what it's supposed to be for that distro. That's pretty cool. So Orok GNU/Linux 2.0. This week, HP, Asus, and Lenovo announced ARM-powered laptops. Some of them claimed to have up to 25 hours of battery life, and they also claimed that they have an emulator that does x86 to ARM emulation, so software that is made for x86 should work on these laptops. They haven't really demonstrated if that works or how well that works, so it might be like a performance hit. It's hard to say, but it's an interesting idea. I think there's a potential problem for Linux in this case, though, is that these ARM laptops, if they become like a popular thing, they might have the same problem that phones do, where the support for installing a different OS could be very difficult. So hopefully that won't be the case here. We won't know for sure until after they release them. Mesa 17.3 was released this week. And with it comes improved Vulkan support for Radeon RadV and Intel ANV drivers. I'm not sure if it's RadV or just RADV, but RadV sounds more fun. So I'm going to do that. It also comes with S3TC support in Mesa 17.3. S3TC is S3 texture compression. And the reason it was added in this version is because the patent expired that restricted it previously. So this is going to be a lot better performance and higher compression yield for various different textures and lots of various games. Mesa 17.3. OpenMW 0.43.0 was released this week. OpenMW is an open source engine for Morrowind. This 0.43 includes 20 new features, including keyboard navigation for menus and visual improvements like water ripples induced by rain and snow. They also include over 100 bug fixes, I think like 109 or something like that, for just improvements to the game in general. And what's really cool about this project, what they do every time they make a release is they release these videos where they're release commentaries. And they're pretty long, they're about 30 minutes or so, depending on how big the release is. But what they do is that they go in and show you all the various different things that they've changed, and they demonstrate things, and they explain them in a very specific, narrow way, so that you can instead of just reading the blog post itself, you can see all the different things that they've changed. It's a really cool thing that a lot of projects should do, and it's a good example of what some projects should take a look at and consider maybe doing themselves. But anyway, OpenMW 0.43.0. Polyball 3D racing platformer was released out of early access this week. The game is a 3D platformer with a racing element. It actually it's like in the same vein as Super Monkey Ball, if you've ever played that game back in the day. It's a really interesting thing that has like, it's essentially like a platformer that you use to, you basically drive around a ball of various different types of shapes and sizes and all kinds of stuff. And terrain that's just really chaotic most of the time. So it's an interesting approach, and I'm definitely looking forward to trying this out. So yeah, and you can also do like these custom shaped balls. They all perform the same way, but they all look different. So you can get like lots of weird, interesting shapes and stuff. But anyway, Polyball, 3D racing platformer. Steam platform specific wish lists are now a thing, sort of, kind of. It allows you to go into your settings for your account and choose which operating systems that you wish for games to support. But this, if as far as the wish list things go, it only works if you check just one platform. So if you choose SteamOS plus Linux, and that's the only one you check, then it will show you in the list when you search, should in the search show you the you know, it should like tailor it to what platform you choose. But if you choose it for the wish list, as long as you choose only one, it will also help you. It'll also help potentially show developers that people are looking for, there might be demand for their game on the Linux platform. So if you haven't done this, check the links in the video description or show notes, and it'll take you directly to your account settings where you can check the Linux box. Valve announced that Steam has stopped supporting Bitcoin for purchasing of games. This actually makes pretty much a ton of sense for them to do this. Not because Bitcoin's not valuable. It is very valuable right now, but it's a volatile currency, and that's just kind of like inherently how it's just built. It's kind of not intended to be volatile, but it's not surprising that it is. But the reason why it's a good decision on their part to do this is because the transaction fees for Bitcoin transactions are around $20, maybe even like $25 or so per transaction. Where it used to be when they instituted this policy to support Bitcoin, the transaction fees were 20 cents. So it made sense back then for them to do this, but now that the transaction fees are about $20, there are some cases where the transaction fee is more, even like three times more than the game's price itself. So it just makes sense for them to not support Bitcoin anymore once it's got to that level. It's unfortunate for people who were previously using Bitcoin to purchase games, but I think it makes sense. This week on the Gaming on Linux website, Liam posted a really interesting article about another way to look at the Linux market share on Steam, or a different perspective. The idea is that someone posted, Hard Penguin suggested something to Liam, and he basically ran with it and did some research and gathered some data about this. And turns out it's really interesting about, you know, this perspective of what could be the reason why the percentage was low. I always said it's because Steam rarely offers the survey to Linux users, but that's probably partially a part of it. I don't think that that's an accurate thing to say. I just think that this is an interesting perspective to add more context to it. So I think that the number of users of Linux gaming has gone up, but the percentage has gone down based on the amount of people who've started using Steam rather than the amount of people who use or do not use Linux. In this article, the idea is that China and regions in that area have recently become a market for Steam in general. So the suggestion was to look at how many people were using the simplified Chinese as their language, for in the statistics. And through this process, we saw the percentage going down, and around September, it started like kind of not plummeting, but kind of as far as the percentage wise goes. But then if you look at the amount of people who are going up that are simplified Chinese speakers, that's basically the exact same time frame. So the percentage of Linux users has actually gone down, not because the amount of users, but the amount of people who are not Linux users has skyrocketed. So the percentage is going down because there are way more people that are using Windows, because China is a very Windows heavy region. So it's just an interesting thing that if you want to take a look at this article, I have a link in the show notes to learn more about it and read more in depth. But I thought this was quite an interesting thing, and I'm very appreciative of Liam and Gaming on Linux for making this article, because I would never even thought about this. So it's a whole new perspective. Besiege is a physics-based building game, and they recently released support for multiplayer and a level editor this week. The multiplayer aspect is a very highly requested feature from the community, so this is a fantastic thing for the community play of Besiege. I actually just talked with a few people about a week ago, just randomly, about this particular game and how they wish that it had multiplayer. So there you go. It does now. Empires of the Undergrowth has been released on Early Access. It's an RTS that has a pretty unique and kind of creepy vibe to it. You essentially control a colony of ants and attack other bugs and other colonies, and it's an interesting RTS approach. I'm not really that much of into RTS, but this is such a unique and interesting approach to the concept. I actually might try it out, even if it does creep me out a little bit, skin crawly kind of thing. But it's still pretty interesting. So if you're interested in having have your skin crawl a little bit, check out Empires of the Undergrowth. Dirty Cal Redo patch has been announced and released. The patch is for the huge Dirty Cal vulnerability. Now, this is actually something that the name is not really... It's kind of a confusing name because it doesn't really mean what people might think it means. First off, I just want to point out that the patch is for a new iteration of a previous bug. So the bug that of Dirty Cal in 2016 was fixed, but it created another bug that needed to be fixed that was recently discovered and patched. So this is not as bad as it was last year, even though the name kind of implies that it is, but it isn't. So huge Dirty Cal only applies to what it affects, not the severity. So the name, the huge part, is not a severity thing of like how bad it is or anything. It's not a huge problem. It's just the thing it affects is named huge. It has that naming scheme. In programming, paging is in operating system development, paging is a memory management scheme by which a computer stores and retrieves data from secondary storage for use in main memory. Kind of like swap, most commonly recognized as swap. On x86, the standard page size is 4 kilobytes. Then there's another one that's got 2 megabytes for the page size, and it's called huge pages. And then there's a gigantic pages that's for 1 gigabyte for each page size. So the particular issue applies to those huge pages, and that's why it's called huge Dirty Cal. The particular thing in question here is the transparent huge pages, or the THP, and this bug was found there. That was a long way of going about saying that while this is something that needs to be patched and needs to be corrected as soon as possible, it's not as skin crawly as the previous topic. Thanks for watching this episode of This Week in Linux. If you like what I do here on the show, please hit that like button. And if you'd like to get more, be sure to subscribe. If you'd like to support the channel, you can order the Linux is Everywhere t-shirt by going to tuxdigital.com/Linux is Everywhere. Just a reminder, the show is live every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern. So join us in the live chat room to discuss all the Linux good news each week. Thanks again for watching. I'm Michael Tunnell with Tux Digital. And as always, keep using, learning, and enjoying Linux.